and welcome to this week's episode of Most Clicked. I'm Matt from Smile. I'm the host standing in for Nath this week whilst he's away, and I'm joined as ever by Kyle from The Education Marketer. Kyle, hey. What are we talking about this week?
One of my LinkedIn posts. I love it when these ones do well, actually. I never know how they're going to perform. So I wrote recently about something I term the portfolio problem. So I'm a content marketer, and I believe in using niche audiences to build an audience and later get value from that audience. But one of the issues that come up in universities time and time again is, well, to build a niche, you need to really focus on something, don't you? But, you know, university portfolios are absolutely huge. So how can you apply that sort of niche thinking at a portfolio level, where sometimes people have hundreds of courses? And the post dove into a few different ways you can approach this. I mean, I split them down into three different ideas, between looking at point of view, looking at format, and then finally, if you wanted to kind of focus in one part of the portfolio, you could design a niche around a subject area. But I know you had a few perspectives on this, Matt, as well, so I'll hand back to you.
Yeah, I thought there were a couple of good examples that you put, particularly into the kind of point of view section that you had in there. And Aston was one of them mentioned, and I think you'd pulled them out for employability. Yeah. And I kind of had a question around how does a university stand out from the crowd when every university's talking about employability?
Well, the funny thing is, it's a fairly recent thing that universities are talking about employability. And I think, like with a lot of ideas and niches, you know, if you become like the category leader for being known for a certain niche, like Aston has done with employability, it automatically, you know, uses that momentum to continue being known as like the king or queen of that niche. So other things, though, on a more tactical basis, and maybe strategic as well, you know, Aston, it genuinely does have the employability element flowing through everything that it does. And you know, you might view it as like a surface thing, like, okay, we'll feature a few students in a placement year. However, you know, from Aston, like, employability, they can't release a new course unless, you know, there's some core element of employability built into the curriculum. There are strategic and school-based processes that make it a thing. Other things they do, you know, the thing that caught my imagination recently, and I'm sure it was a strategic decision, but they gave an honorary degree to Ben Francis, who's like the CEO of Gymshark and is one of their older students. I don't think he finished his degree, but he's been quite close to the university ever since he left. And, you know, if you're giving out honorary degrees to, you know, what a better word, influencers and, you know, highly successful entrepreneurs, they're going to talk about it. And, you know, some of the posts that came off the back of that from Ben were incredible and just cement the reputation of the university. And other things they do, they run like enterprise-led placements as well. So if you want to start a business, you can do that, Aston, get your degree while you're doing it and receive guidance as part of that degree program. So they've got a lot of things going for them, is what I'm saying, in that area, so that they can walk, you know, walk the talk, talk the walk. I don't know what the words are. Gone. But yeah, they can do it. They practice what they preach. That's a better way to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, you know, when we think about University of Gloucestershire, we've obviously done extensive work with them and the whole sustainability thing around moving their prospectus online, and all of the work that they do on campus all contributes towards that. So it's about kind of owning a space. Is that fair to say?
I think so. I mean, you're right there. Gloucestershire is a great example. You know, they weren't always the University for Sustainability. Someone made that decision, and now it seeps through to everything that they do. You know, they've got podcasts on it. They've got campaign creative on it. They've run prospectus-based campaigns on sustainability messaging. You know, another example is the Open University. They major on the idea of flexibility, and they're the greatest provider of online courses. Well, pre the pandemic, you know, there's a few other options out there now, but they're still known as that university for flexibility. So, you know, even if your portfolio is vast, you can still be known for one fee and own that space.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other category that interested me was around owning a niche. I quite liked the approach then. I'm fairly certain there's a university in the UK focused on agriculture. Mm. And we were having a chat about this beforehand, and you said, oh, you know, some universities really have that advantage because they own that niche. But it strikes me that over in the US, like Harvard Business School is known as a kind of sub-brand of Harvard, but we don't seem to do that quite as much over here. Like if we think about websites, everything seems to be kind of grouped together, whereas out in the States, things are more decentralized. Is there a movement towards that, do you think, or an opportunity to move towards that?
You know, that's a really interesting one. I definitely say in the UK, there's more of an emphasis on having a single domain. I know that sounds a bit web talky, so maybe let's kind of open that out a little bit. But I think there's a general movement to keep things centralized under a university brand, and that makes sense. I think there's some areas where that it is more harmful than goods, perhaps. Yeah. I mean, there's some universities in the UK that have such a world-renowned business school, like Harvard's, for instance, that, you know, there are situations where that business school will have its own brand, and that makes sense for it to have its own brand because it has that international reputation, whereas the university, for instance, might not. Mm. So if you've got a business school in the name, for instance, and you're going to go and speak to a bunch of students who are interested in business, it kind of makes sense to go as a business school, doesn't it? So yeah, I think there's give and take in things like that. But I, you know, I do feel, given where we are with like the internet and how, you know, it's far easier today to find niches and interests, you know, at that sort of community level than it has been ever before in history, that we might start to see a fragmentation of some university brands, but in a positive way, in a strategic way. So, yeah, you know, rather than always going out to market as the brand, it is actually possible today with like digital to go out to those niche audiences with a different identity, with a different proposition, and I don't think that's a bad thing as long as it's managed.
And so, do you think when a university is looking to recruit students, do you think the audiences appreciate that those niches? Like we worked on the University of Gloucestershire website, and I remember having a campus tour, and we were taken around to various different departments, and we walked into the, I think it was graphic design department, this beautiful typography on the wall, and that level of personality perhaps isn't reflected on what's put out in the public, but when you're on campus, you see it. And I got chatting to people around the level of personality they want to bring through into those things. So do you think that's something that needs to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's beneficial. I think, again, I mean, it falls into what is possible in like a digital space versus what works in a physical one, I guess. But you know, I know for sure that it's websites definitely over the last 10 years have moved more towards that sort of minimalist aesthetic, like blocks fitting together, and you know, I think a lot of instances, again, that makes sense with like content design and patterns, and you know, putting user first, they can actually access the services that they need. But I know for sure that it's becoming increasingly easier to be more creative with your website designs, but retain that accessibility. So I think as, you know, we move forward and tech becomes better and you know, rather than having to kind of have everything built bespoke, that you can get some more elements off the shelf, it brings the price down. I think we'll start to see more websites reflecting the needs of those audiences more readily. I mean, I think it's it might be University of the Arts London, who have a, you know, very kind of arts focused portfolio, don't they? And their website is functional, and you can toggle on and off the accessibility trigger on it. Trigger is probably not the right word, button switch. But you can, you know, and it kind of reflects that kind of creative mindset that it's potential students have, but it doesn't, you know, lose the sense of serving user needs with without losing accessibility, essentially.
Yeah, that's some really cool points.
No, thank you very much. So I guess we'll leave it there. I've made a really good cool point. So as always, people, thank you for watching, thank you for subscribing, and take care, and we'll see you again next week.